Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 164. Chance Watson bring you the news today. This episode is brought to you by Andy's Heating and Cooling. Andy's Heating and Cooling has been selling and installing furnaces, air conditioners, fireplaces, barbecues, and much more in new and existing homes since 1972. 50 years later, Andy's Heating and Cooling is still doing business the old-fashioned way with a handshake. Come and visit Andy's showroom at 7800 North Government Way in Coeur d'Alene, which features all the latest wood-fired stoves, pellet stoves, and gas stoves from Quadrifier, Ketolator, and Heat and Glow. Andy's also carries the Big Green Egg smokers and grills. Join the Andy's Heating and Cooling team on Friday, September 16th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, September 17th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. to celebrate 50 years of operations in North Idaho with special deals, grilled and smoked food, and raffles. Mentioned last week, I had a chance to pop into Andy's for the first time ever in my life. I know that sounds weird. Oh, been up here forever. How have you not been in there? Well, I guess maybe I haven't ever owned a home, so I don't need to buy a barbecue or really need any of those services. But I stopped by that showroom, got a chance to chat with everybody. Really great people over there. Definitely excited to be going Facebook Live at that event next Saturday. Everybody, welcome back to the show. Very happy to have you on. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us if you're on a podcatcher of some kind, if you listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that jazz. Really appreciate it if you subscribe. That makes me happy. That increases my numbers. It makes my boss happy also as well. He likes when we have higher listenership numbers. I don't know if you knew this, but more listeners is better than less listeners. I don't know if you knew that. Little peek behind the curtain in the journalism industry, everybody. Big thing on the news recently. I think it's hard not to talk about it a little bit. The Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth II, has finally passed away. She had a long life, didn't she? It's interesting to as somebody with a history background, it's always interesting to look back on the breadth of someone's life. And God, you know, 96 years old, that's a long time to be on this planet and a lot of time to do a lot of things. Like any individual and like any politician, or in her case, monarch, she's going to have mixed emotions. Jump onto social media. You can find just about any hurtful, terrible thing out there in the world. Also, lots of great things about Queen Elizabeth. Lots of people, you know, praising her work as Queen of England and the UK and all that, and the Commonwealths and everything that encompasses all of that stuff. Obviously, some people not a fan, but you know what? That's what happens when you have to make the big calls and you lead a nation, especially for so long, which she certainly did. It's very weird to think that she served in World War II. That is very strange to think about how, you know, we're getting up there in the years. You know, I used to, when I was younger, there were still people from World War I alive. Now we're getting up there. So it made me think about, you know, there's so much British stuff going on, obviously, because I have a one track mind. Went immediately from that to thinking about, you know, you see the video, the tribute videos and whatnot, and they'll show her, you know, knighting people and whatnot. And that, you know, obviously my mind's going to go straight to James Bond. Long listeners of this show have known that I'm a huge James Bond fan. Made me think of, you know, Daniel Craig, which made me think of the movie Glass Onion, which is coming out here soon. I've been, I don't know about you guys, but I've been heavily Facebook targeted for ads on that movie. Knives Out, obviously a spectacular film. I don't think there are too many people out there that would say that it's not a good movie. It was fantastic. So hopefully Glass Onion lives up to it. We've seen how sequels can sometimes fall flat, but that's going to be good. Daniel Craig, no longer Bond, by the way. I actually did a quick Google search before I hit record just to keep you guys on Bond watch. No Bond has been chosen, just whoever's going to take up the mantle of James Bond yet. I did read an article that it sounds like they're going to reboot Bond in some way, like a soft reboot or something. I don't know how that's going to work. The timeline of James Bond is already kind of sketchy, to say the very least. So I don't know how that goes, if we're rebooting it for the ninth time or fifth time, or, you know, it just depends on how you look at it. Like, is every different actor a different James Bond or a different 007? Yeah, however that works. I don't know. We need a James Bond stan to come on the show and walk me through the timeline of how all that works. We're coming up on fall, everybody. I think that's probably one of the happiest things for me. Fall is my I know that sounds very basic, but fall is my favorite season. It times up with a lot of things. The weather gets a little more manageable. Usually at this point in the year, I've been sweating profusely throughout the summer. Yes, I'm unfortunately one of those terrible people that sweat a lot when it gets you know, even above 75, 80 degrees. So it's usually a signaling of that, and I can actually start wearing sweatshirts and hoodies and that kind of stuff again. For hockey players and hockey fans out there, this would be jersey over hoodie weather. I am pretty excited to be looking forward to watching some hockey on the going to be going to some Seattle Kraken games. Go Kraken. Really excited to be having that local team here. And any chance I get, I'm going to be trying to make it over to Seattle to go see some home games for the Kraken. Also, for North, a little more north, I know there's some hockey fans in North Idaho, but definitely something that is a lot more widespread up here. Hunting season right around the corner. At least big game season. Make sure you go out and get your permits and your licensing and all that jazz before you start going out there. Now, I don't need to remind, there are a lot of people that have these dates circled on their calendar. As soon as the season opens up, they take a full week off of work. You know, everybody's mysteriously disappears for a week up into the woods to go hunting at the beginning of the season. So I get that, totally understandable. Actually, to be speaking of that, we'll be probably having Idaho Fish and Game representatives coming back in to talk about the upcoming big game season. Maybe it'll be just a nice refresher for some of you guys to let you know. Maybe they might even share some tips and tricks on what's going on. And just you know, really get you into the mood for that. Today, though, speaking of interviews, today we have another very special guest coming on. We had Governor Brad Little last week. This week we have Speaker of the House Scott Bedke. Speaker Bedke is also running for Lieutenant Governor. He and Little were up here in North Idaho very recently for a function that happened just across the street from where I'm recording this podcast right now. And Speaker Bedke had time to come in and chat with me a little bit. Had a great conversation, very interesting, got to talk about a lot of topics, hit on the special session a little bit that we covered earlier with Governor Little, but we also hit on a lot of other topics. So without further ado, we're going to jump right into that interview. Again, if you guys are more interested in whatever I'm talking about today, you know, specifics-wise, you know, if you want a specific topic, feel free to jump ahead, go into the show notes of this show, go into the time index, and just skip right ahead to the time index that you're looking to. So if you're looking for Coeur d'Alene headlines, you can jump ahead. Shoshone headlines, Sandpoint headlines, Bonner Ferry headlines, they're all there. You can just jump right ahead and find that if you're not interested in the interview. But, you know, I appreciate when you listen to the interviews. That always makes me happy. So without further ado, we're going to jump right into that interview with Speaker Scott Bedke. Let's talk special session. That was last Thursday, I believe.
Yes, last Thursday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What are your initial thoughts, impressions, feelings leaving that session?
Well, I think that we, as Idahoans, have to count it as a success. Number one, we are in a position that none of us thought we would be in. Idaho, the framework, the groundwork that we have laid through decades of conservative leadership, if you'll say that, and setting a very pragmatic conservative budget, mm-hmm. Have paid off. And Idahoans are hard workers. Mm-hmm. Idahoans have a great work ethic, whether it's at the individual level, the family level, or the business, the small business level, even the corporate business level. They work hard, and all of that hard work found its way back to the tax system and ended up in Boise as way more money than we needed to cover the budget that we would set. Mm-hmm. And it looks like that's going to happen again.
All right.
Because we always set a pretty conservative budget. We don't overspend. And so it was great that we recognized that. It was great that the governor called us back in, and we sent back a big check to all Idahoans, $300 for individuals, $600 if you file jointly, or 10% of whatever you paid in 2020, whichever is larger.
Right.
And so that's going to get the money back into the Idahoans' hands from whence it came. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. In addition, taking a maybe a longer view, we and a step towards a keeping our business climate very positive here, we went to a 5.8 flat tax. But we also exempted, if you're an individual, approximately the first $4,500 of earned income and the first $9,000 if you're filing jointly. So the law says $2,500 and $5,000, but everybody forgets that those numbers are adjusted for inflation. Mm. And so the real number is $4,500 and $9,000. Mm. And so the first $9,000 that the family earns is not taxed. And then every dollar past that is taxed at 5.8. I think that sends a great message that Idaho is open for business and that it's been a positive business climate here. Every good chance we get, we're going to make it more positive, because keep in mind that every business pays through the individual schedule when it comes to income taxes. So this will help big business, small business, and families. And that's a net good thing for the state as we look forward. By the same token, a positive business climate also includes a great school system.
Right.
You know, but quick story. I mean, I'm father of four. One of the kids was contemplating a move out of state, and the job was great, and the job was not the problem, but all of their research had to do with the schools and the little league programs and the dance programs and all of those extracurricular things outside of school. But decisions were made as to where they would live based on the schools that their kids were going to go into. Mm-hmm. So if we think that a positive business climate doesn't include good schools, mm-hmm. we're kidding ourselves.
Right.
And we have got to always have a system where every kid has got a great teacher in every classroom from K through 12. But then I think we need to start blurring the lines between 10th and 14th about getting people, you know, college is not for everyone.
Sure.
Universities are not for everyone.
Sure.
But if I talk to kids a lot, when I ask them, why are you going back to community college or to trade school or whatever, it's the answer is universally to get a better job. I want to get a good job.
That's the idea.
That's the whole idea. And so one of the things and one of the commitments that happened in the special session was to carve out. Now, keep in mind, we did not appropriate any money. Mm. We created a bucket, put a sticky note on the side of it. We didn't use permanent marker. We put a sticky note on the side of it that said for education, 330 for K-12, but 80 for in-demand careers.
Right.
And I want to be part of making that in-demand careers fit the demographics. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. You know, I have a baccalaureate degree. I'm assuming you do as well. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of classes I took that I don't think we need to take if I'm going to get a certificate for the trades. You know, it'd be great, and lifelong learning is one of
useful information.
It's useful information, yeah. And it's a pleasure to me, etc. But that's me. But we need people in the trades, and we need to remove obstacles from getting people in the trades, because remember what they want to do. I just want to get a better job.
Right.
And I don't think you can connect plumbing with world history, arguably.
So have specifics on where that money that's going to be allocated to education. Have already conversations been happening about specifics on where that money's going to go in education?
Well, yes, conversations.
Yeah,
but again, during the special session, we didn't make any appropriations, but it signals that Idaho is open for business because part of a positive business climate is good schools.
Sure.
And so that's what we did. Now, I don't think that Governor Little, I know Governor Little did not want to overstep and take the place of the legislature that is going to be seated mm-hmm. in January. But I do think he wanted to send – number one, he wanted to get the money back in the taxpayers' hands.
Right.
Number two, he wanted to improve in a long game kind of way the overall business climate from the tax perspective.
Yep.
But business climate includes good schools.
Yeah.
And that's – and he wanted to signal an investment there. Now, what that looks like, what we're going to spend it on, who we're going to spend it on, how we're going to spend it, those are legislative process
questions. Yeah, he made that clear to the legislator. But it gets the ball rolling.
It gets the ball rolling. And you know, one thing – I mean, I've been the Speaker of the House – for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that spans both sides of the aisles and the spectrums within the parties is that everybody wants their kids or their grandkids to have access to a quality, high quality mm-hmm. education.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but everybody has a little different idea of what that's going to look like.
Sure.
And, you know, people want to talk about school choice, or they want to talk about this program or that program or whatever. But literacy in the early grades is a common denominator. Mm-hmm. You've got to have those kids reading at that grade level by the time they leave third grade, or they're going to be behind from that point on. So we got to emphasize there. But we, on the other end of the pipeline, we got to emphasize these trades and getting people back into the trades. The economy is demanding it. The good jobs are there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the special session signaled a willingness to have all of these conversations.
Right.
And to keep Idaho schools great.
Sure. I want to switch gears for a second. Before we kick the mic up, we were talking a little bit about growth in our state. It's biggest hole. But especially here in North Idaho, we're up here right now. In fact, you're up here in Coeur d'Alene right now. We're in the Coeur d'Alene studio. You're up here kind of talking about growth a little bit
right.
and the expansion of how much we've got in our state at the moment. It's a good problem to have because there's obviously a reason people are coming here, right?
Right. Well, I mean, so like I've said, we have gone through decades of careful financial management. We have created... we have put Idaho values back into our policies.
Mm-hmm.
And so together we have created the best state in the nation to live, to work, and to raise a family. North Idaho's problem is it's the best place to live, to work, and to raise a family, but it's also arguably one of the most beautiful parts mm-hmm. of our state, in fact, of our country. And so you cannot blame people for wanting to move here
right.
and having what we have taken for granted all these years.
Right.
And so... But will it bring challenges to us?
Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely will. Yeah, I mean, there'll be more competition for every drop of water in our rivers.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be more competition for every lane mile.
Yep.
There'll be more competition for every desk in every school and space in our, you know, in all of our public spaces.
Yeah.
That's in a workforce. We're expanding. We don't have the workforce to build the houses and the material and the supply chains are all behind. And so, living in the other end of the state,
yes.
I'm telling you that the exact same problems are down there because they think their part of the state is beautiful too.
Sure.
And it is. Eastern Idaho,
everything is.
We are so blessed to live in this very diverse state.
Yes.
And we just got to figure out how to solve these problems associated with growth.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to talk to each other.
Right.
Because we have so much more that unites us here than divides us. It's not even funny. Yet we concentrate on these nuances and these what ifs and create this divide. But if we just quietly go back to doing what our parents and our grandparents taught us about getting along, we'd be better off. But Idaho is we have been discovered and
yes.
we're not going back.
Sure.
So these problems associated with growth are going to drive our politics going forward. Now, we can pine for the 1950s and how it used to be,
yeah.
but the problem, but we're not going back.
Mm-hmm.
And So anyway, that those will be the challenges for every elected official as we go forward, to keep people involved, to be absolutely transparent in what we do. And but we have common problems that are going to mostly be circle around growth.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. We've seen it up here time and time again, just with the massive influx of people. And then, you know, that comes around the pandemic. That was another factor. Yeah. And then you've got inflation that comes in right now. Like there's a lot of factors at play that come into expanded growth in our area.
That's true. Well, there's very few. You can't blame anybody, like I said earlier. If you got a shelter in place, this is a pretty good place to do it.
I couldn't agree more.
That's right.
I want to get into the last part here, talking about your run for lieutenant governor. First off, why?
Well, because of all this stuff that I've described,
sure,
to you, I am totally vested in Idaho and its success. Mm-hmm. I'm a fourth generation cattle rancher from the other end. Mm-hmm. I live right near the border of Utah and Nevada, and that's where our family has been since the 1870s. I guess, but more than that, husband, father, and grandfather, mm-hmm. and I want all of the opportunities that my father and grandfather and great grandfather had to be available to my kids and grandkids and their kids. And so I'm vested in Idaho and its success. I kind of got into politics I got appointed originally.
Sure.
But then it turned out that I could do it as easy as everybody else and maybe easier than some. And so I've stayed and I've tried to make a difference. And I've been recognized by those who know me best, frankly, by the other elected officials. They have chosen me 5 times in a row to be their speaker. And while that's gratifying, but it's really humbling to be trusted. Mm-hmm. Now, these people don't necessarily agree with me. Mm-hmm. But they trust me enough to run the system.
Sure.
And but keep in mind, I left a family business at crunch time. You know, so I'm in Boise during calving season. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm in, and if I'm going to leave that to go do something else, then I've got to make a difference. That's just how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. And so I've applied myself in a bunch of different areas. Natural resources, in finance and the appropriations process, in transportation, and I've learned those things inside and out. I think I got the experience that Idaho is going to need in each of these growth areas, frankly. Education, I've spent time on education committees, the Germain Committee, as well as carried their budgets for years. And I think that the growing pains that Idaho is going to face are in these areas where I have experience. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm running. But I think the underlier motivator is I do not want to wake up 10 years from now and wonder where our Idaho went.
Right.
I am nostalgic. I know which things are changing, but the underlying values that we can identify, and you know, and they're somewhat intangible at mm-hmm. times. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to lose our Idaho way, as corny as that sounds. And I want it, like I say, but my nightmare is to wake up 10 years from now and wonder where it all went.
Right.
And so I'm going to be found, if the citizens will have me, doing what I can to keep Idaho, Idaho, to keep our values in our policies.
Moving into the lieutenant governor role, if you are elected, it's kind of, you know, the elephant in the room, so to speak, that you're whoever this person is that's going to come into the position. The lieutenant governor position has had some controversy around it as of late.
Well, it has, and I don't think it's been right. And regardless of who the governor is, as the lieutenant governor, I will never embarrass Idaho. And I think that our citizens expect us to ride for the brand. I mean, they expect the governor and the lieutenant governor to work for Idaho, not for any self-interest. And we shouldn't even be having this conversation. That is such a given.
Yep.
That, You know, but we've seen the opposite, and sure. I don't think that that's right.
In my lifetime, it's never been that.
Nor mine, and we had Republicans and Democrats and Republicans.
Sure.
And it never but they rode for – well, I'll use these rancher or these cowboy analogies. They rode for the brand. The brand, the owner of the cattle is Idaho.
Sure.
And you work for Idaho.
Sure.
And so that's you know, that's how I view it. Now, again, the lieutenant governorship in Idaho is somewhat unique in that most things about the job are undefined. Mm-hmm. But what you'll see me doing is bringing my expertise on water and natural resources, on transportation, on education policy, and then the overall economic policy, where I've spent my 20 years in those areas plugging in to the and I'll be in the executive branch from now on, but mm-hmm. the experience that I gained in the legislative branch will serve us well there.
Makes sense to me.
And besides that, I can't sit around. I'll be doing something in those areas, all for the what I think will be the betterment.
Sure. Makes sense to me. Okay, let's end with I'm gonna ask you the same question I asked Governor Little. We ended on something lighthearted. When you come up to North Idaho, is there one place that you like to go eat at that you just always like to swing by?
Hudson's.
Governor Little said Hudson's as well. Yes, it's always the spot they go. He goes in and gets a burger.
Well, I mean, but I used to go always still do is the Wolf Creek Lodge.
Oh yeah,
Wolf Lodge. Yep. That's a pretty good steak there.
It's so funny you said that because I was before I asked Governor Little, I was like, I bet he's gonna say Wolf Lodge. I know he did. And then he hit me with Hudson's. Like, oh yeah, Hudson's. Okay, that makes
Hudson's.
Sense.
But I mean,
Wolf Lodge. I was out there recently. It was delicious.
I mean, these are people. Well, and I like to come through Ernie's.
Oh,
in Lewiston
yes.
too.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I'm a good – well, I mean, Ernie and I were on the Cattlemen's Board forever.
Okay.
And I love seeing his success and his family's success now that have taken that over, and that's a great meal as well. And I'm an accomplished eater.
Sure. And, that's a great way of saying that.
And so I like – you know, Beverly's over here at the resort is a great place. The one just across the street here, what's the name? The Seasons?
Seasons. Seasons is
always,
great.
Always eat there a little. But like I say, I look forward to a Hudson Burger.
Yes.
And I look forward to a steak at Wolf Lodge.
Nothing wrong with those choices at all. All right, Speaker, thank you so much for coming in. And we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Thank you, Chance.
Big thanks again to the speaker for coming on the show and chatting with me. It was a good time. It was one of those more laid-back conversations we like to have here on the show. We like to give you the news, but we also like to have some fun with it in a little more casual, laid-back environment. So that was definitely fell into this category. It was good sitting down and chatting with somebody who was so open about what was going on here. And hope to talk to him again. Maybe in this capacity as speaker, or you know, if he wins election as lieutenant governor. All right, let's jump into some Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines. But first, Hecla Mining Company is the leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. Speaking of mining, those who are follow us on the North Idaho Now Facebook page, if you aren't, I suggest that you jump over there and give us a little like and follow. Those might have seen that I went underground recently. The North Idaho Now podcast got to go underground over in the Silver Valley and check out a new mine that's going that's got some cool new things going on. I don't want to give away too many of the details. That story will come out next week, and we'll talk about it on the show next week. But just a little tease right there. All right. Without further ado, Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines. Wednesday, September 7th, headline, City Approves $123 Million Budget. This is by Bill Bewley. The Coeur d'Alene City Council on Tuesday approved a $123.9 million budget for the 2022-2023 fiscal year. It also unanimously approved a two-year contract with Coeur d'Alene Firefighters, local number 710, International Association of Firefighters. Those union names are always so complicated to me. The council approved the budget on a 5-1 vote following public hearing, with Councilman Dan Gookin voting no. The council went to executive session for discussions about police and firefighter contracts before approving the budget. The council emerged about an hour later to approve the budget and then the contract. The budget includes the allowable 3% increase in property taxes, which is projected to generate $710,216. General fund expenditures totaled $57.1 million, with $22.1 million for the police department and $13.3 million for the fire department. Another $7.9 million is earmarked for streets and engineering. Enterprise funds of $55.3 million included $23.7 million for the wastewater fund and $14.3 million for the water fund. Revenue includes $27 million in property tax revenue, an increase of $2.6 million over the previous year. The closure of the Lake District, an urban renewal district, is expected to generate about $930,000. Quote, "This is a very solid year for the city of Coeur d'Alene," said City Administrator Toy Timonson. The city's latest taxable valuation came in at about $12 billion, a nearly 80% increase. Timonson said that the levy rate was $1,000 per assessed valuation. It will drop to $2.07 per $1,000. He said new growth is projected at $268,000, quote, less than we've seen in the last 7 years. The agreement with local number 710-IAFF will be in effect from October 1st to September 30th, 2024. It's good that we're moving forward on that. When it comes to budgets, there can sometimes be some disagreements between everybody, you know, taxes and that kind of thing. But makes sense, and glad we're moving forward on it. Moving on, vandals at their worst. This is by Bill Bewley. Cases of vandalism and graffiti are on the rise in Coeur d'Alene. City Parks Director Bill Greenwood said the city has had at least 50 instances of damage to city property this year. Quote, "According to our staff, this is the worst we have ever seen," he wrote. Sergeant Jared Renault said police fielded 35 reports of graffiti from June through August. That's nearly double the 21 graffiti cases over the same time frame last year. Renault said it's difficult to say who is responsible to catch anyone in the act of vandalism, as this generally happens after hours and police aren't notified right away. He said it could be a few people behind it rather than a large number of vandals running around the city. Downtown is a popular target for marking buildings. Greenwood said the city has been hit at several parks, including Northshire Landings, Bluegrass, McEwen, City Park, and Memorial Field, with Landings and Bluegrass seeing the greatest incidence of vandalism. Quote, "At some of these locations, we have to close the restrooms for several days and reopen only to have them hit again," he wrote. In March, the suffragist statue on Front Avenue was spray-painted, and city crews cleaned that up the next morning. Despite a reward for being offered, no suspect was arrested. Greenwood said vandals break all kinds of things, from paper dispensers and restrooms to locks on doors to trees in parks. Someone even spray-painted large rocks on the waterfront at Tubbs Hill, which city crews corrected. He estimated that this year about 30 irrigation heads valued at $100 each have been destroyed at McEwen Park. City staff called police if the vandalism is significant or the graffiti appears to be gang-related tagging. Some tags could be attributed to, quote, wannabes. Further on, quote, "I don't think that we've got a real gang problem," Greenwood said. Private property owners who are victims of graffiti are responsible to clean it up in a timely manner. According to City Attorney Randy Adams, the city will only require removal of graffiti if it constitutes as a, quote, public nuisance in the opinion of the city. Then the city must give written notice to the property owner, who has 48 hours after receipt of the notice to remove the graffiti. You know, I'd like to think that mostly anybody who's running around doing graffiti are just knucklehead kids. Unfortunately, working in this business long enough, sometimes that's not the case. And very sadly and unfortunately, it is grown adults who are also going around and making these very poor decisions. Don't spray paint stuff. Don't graffiti. It's very much frowned upon and illegal. It's also illegal. Moving on, Spirit Lake woman gets jail for monstrous child abuse. This is by Kay Thornbrew. A woman convicted of monstrous mistreatment of a child will spend about 7 months in jail. Last month, a jury convicted Monica E. Shug, 37 of Spirit Lake on three counts of injury to a child, all misdemeanors. Judge Clark Peterson sentenced Shug on Tuesday to 180 days in jail on each charge, with 5 days credit for time served and 155 days suspended on the second and third charges. That means Shug is expected to serve 215 days in jail, after which she will be placed on supervised probation for 2 years. The charges stem from January when Shug's former husband, 37-year-old Matthew M. Shug, received a 20-year prison sentence after he pleaded guilty to sexually abusing a child. He will be eligible for parole in about a decade. Spirit Lake police said Monica Shug physically abused the same child. She also inflicted psychological abuse on the child, prosecutors said, by repeatedly blaming the child for Matthew Shug's abuse. Yikes. Police arrested Shug in April. Though she was not a party to the sexual abuse, Peterson said during sentencing that Monica Shug became a, quote, second abuser to the child through her actions. Quote, the behaviors of Ms. Shug are monstrous, Peterson said. It's not a slip or a misspeak, it's a mindset. When Shug addressed the court, she described her embarrassment and the impact that the case had on her life. Quote, that was troubling to me, Peterson said. You did not articulate regard for the victim. Instead, you talked about what you are being deprived of. Boy, this individual definitely deserves some jail time. I think we'll just leave it at that. Are you looking to get the word out about your business? The Haganon Media Group is your full-service digital marketing agency that can make inroads into any market with multiple channels. Website optimization, paid search campaigns, web advertising placements, and traditional advertising methods are all brought to bear as they are needed. Haganon Media Group's passion for their craft is matched by their passion for detail. Some of their best projects have blended state-of-the-art digital marketing techniques and tactics with visual displays and brilliant website design. For more information on how Haganon Media can provide effective digital marketing solutions that bring your brand to the forefront via web design, web development, PPC, retargeting, SEO, and print, call 208-819-6610. Takes into Thursday, September 8th headlines. Headline, poll worker found not guilty. This is by Kay Thornbrew. A jury determined on Wednesday that a former poll worker accused of misconduct during last November's local elections did not commit illegal act. After about an hour of deliberation, the jury found Hayden resident Laura L. Van Voorhees not guilty of electioneering, a misdemeanor offense. Been reading about Ms. Voorhees for a long time now. Van Voorhees, rather. The charge stems from November 2nd, 2021, when Van Voorhees reportedly offered pamphlets printed with information about critical race theory to voters while she worked at the polls. Critical race theory is an academic concept. The central idea is that race is a social construct and that racism is not just a product of individual prejudice, but also embedded in legal systems and policies. CRT is taught at the college level, particularly in law school. Idaho's electioneering law specifically forbids circulating, quote, cards or handbills of any kind within 100 feet of a polling place. Coonie County Elections Manager Asa Gray told the court that poll workers, including Van Voorhees, all go through training before Election Day. The volunteers received instructions not to discuss political matters or, quote, anything remotely related to ballot issues at the polling place, he said. No education-related items were on the ballot at the site where Van Voorhees volunteered, which encompassed two precincts. In other precincts, three seats on the Coeur d'Alene School District Board of Trustees were on the ballot. Van Voorhees said she helped create the pamphlets and brought them to the polling place. She said three candidates running in the school board races paid for the pamphlets and used the material in their campaigns. She said she attended school board meetings in Coeur d'Alene and distributed pamphlets in order to, quote, warn parents about CRT. Van Voorhees maintained that she handed out just one pamphlet to a friend, also interested in, quote, defeating CRT in local schools, who voted at the polling place. Multiple witnesses testified that they saw Van Voorhees give and offer the pamphlets to other voters at different times of the day. Denise Mackinson, who supervised Van Voorhees and her fellow poll workers on Election Day, said she instructed Van Voorhees before polls opened not to give the pamphlets to voters. She testified that she told Van Voorhees twice more that day to put the pamphlets away where voters could not see them. Van Voorhees said she made a conscious decision to bring the pamphlets into the polling place because she did not believe giving them to friends was inappropriate. Electioneering is a misdemeanor offense punishable by a fine of up to $1,000. Boy, glad that's put to bed. I've been reading about that saga for quite a while now. Moving on, building for the future. this story and another one that was on the front page of the Coeur d'Alene Press this day kind of encompasses an event that happened. I mentioned it previously before introducing Scott Bedke on the show. An event that happened over at the Coeur d'Alene Resort, the Coeur d'Alene Economic Development Corporation's annual meeting, where Governor Brad Little made an appearance and spoke to everybody before he had to boot Scoot Boogie off to Rathdrum for another event. It was a great time. It was a good thing. Hearing about the economic growth in Kootenai County is a lot. You know, there's a lot going on, a lot of growth here, and with the growth comes a lot of economic opportunities, and you got to find a way to roll with the punches. And one of those problems that was brought up a lot was employees and the lack thereof of them. So if you're interested in those two stories that were on the front page, I'm not going to go into in detail into them, but if you're interested in what happened at that meeting and what was talked about, I would recommend going to check those stories out. Moving on, school districts could qualify for emergency levy funds. This is by Devin Weeks. Before the second Monday of September, Idaho school districts that qualify have the ability to levy emergency funds from taxpayers without voter approval if more students show up than expected and additional funding is needed to support their learning. The Coeur d'Alene School Board is holding a special meeting at noon Friday to discuss a potential emergency levy. The need is based on average attendance, not enrollment, from the first week of school. School districts showing the need for these funds must certify with county commissioners and request a school emergency fund levy upon all taxable property in the district. Post Falls Superintendent Dina Nacarado said Post Falls generally tries not to use the emergency levy option. Post Falls did not have a meeting scheduled for its board to discuss it further as of Tuesday afternoon. Quote, it truly is funding districts to pay for new students who weren't accounting for the last year's numbers, Nacarado said. We won't have attendance numbers until the end of this week. The press reported in 2019, Post Falls School District approved a $615,000 in one-time emergency funds to offset costs when it grew by 144 students. This paid for new teachers, one school bus, six support personnel, textbooks, desks, and technology. The district saw a reduced tax rate that year, even with the emergency levy. Lakeland Superintendent Lisa Arnold said she is not planning to recommend an emergency levy to the board. She said her district has set aside elementary and secondary school emergency relief dollars to handle any new hires in the fall. She is also looking ahead to the supplemental levy ask coming up next spring. Quote, our people are being taxed already, Arnold said. We are doing everything we can to take care of what we can take care of without going to the patrons for taxes. Maven said Coeur d'Alene hasn't enacted an emergency levy in at least 3 years. He said this levy has nothing to do with the school plant facilities levy election Coeur d'Alene ran August 30th. Quote, if they recognize attendance is higher than what they budgeted for, they can add more if they need to hire teachers or if they have other needs not anticipated by the start of the year, Maven said. Adding that even if significantly more students show up, an emergency levy is justified, the board would still have to vote on whether to move forward with it if district staff recommends it go before the board. Coeur d'Alene School Board meets at Midtown Meeting Center, 1505 North 5th Street in Coeur d'Alene. That meeting is happened about an hour ago. So we'll have results on that. Moving on, Friday, September 9th, aquifer protection approved. This by Kay Thornbrew. Kootenai County Commissioners approved an ordinance Thursday that aims to protect the county's drinking water supply. Commissioner Bill Brooks and Leslie Duncan voted to adopt the ordinance that restricts septic density over the Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer to one dwelling per 5 acres. Chris Filios was not present for the meeting. Quote, I don't think there's any question that the mass majority of people are in favor of this, Brooks said. An aquifer is a natural underground geological formation where large quantities of groundwater fill spaces between rocks and sediment. The Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer covers an area of about 250 square miles in Idaho, extending from Lake Ponderay southward to Coeur d'Alene and Post Falls, then westward to the Idaho-Washington border. The aquifer is the sole source of drinking water for most of Kootenai County. Increased numbers of septic systems over the aquifer can significantly deteriorate the aquifer's water quality if they are not adequately spaced, according to the Our Gem Coeur d'Alene Lake Collaborative. The 5-acre septic density rule now embedded in the county's code mirrors the rule adopted by the Panhandle Health District in 1977, which was set to expire at the end of the year's legislative session. Commissioners enacted an emergency ordinance in May that maintained the same rule and voted to approve a permanent version of the ordinance this week. Some local agencies are calling for the county to expand the aquifer's boundaries and afford protections to more of the drinking water supply. Among them is Greens Ferry Water and Sewer District in Post Falls, which provides water for around 1,300 people. The district's well site is south of the Spokane River, just outside the boundaries of the aquifer, which were drawn in 1977. Well, that certainly could be outdated. Reading this story just gives me flashbacks to, you know, high school and middle school. You're growing up here in North Idaho in Post Falls. We heard a lot about, you know, you're in middle school and high school unless you're huge geology nerd, which, you know, kudos to the geology nerds. It'll pay off eventually. Wait, early on, you're just a person who likes rocks, and that's probably not going to make you many friends. No, I wasn't one of those people. What are you talking about? I didn't collect rocks. It was you always learn from both middle school, you know, physical science and physical and geology in high school and that kind of thing, that we were very lucky here in North Idaho to have the Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer, as many areas have to import in water from miles away. California being a prime example of that. They have to import and buy it, actually. So we are very lucky where we live to have the Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer, and it was always stressed to me the importance of keeping it clean. That was the first thing of don't dump your motor oil into the grass or whatever, because it'll pollute the aquifer. So hey, there you go. If you didn't know that, don't dump motor oil down, and do everything you can to try to keep the aquifer clean, because that's where we get our water. Moving on, group forms to support legal STRs. This is by Bill Dealey. The Coeur d'Alene, the CDA Vacation Rental Alliance, recently formed in response to the city's plans to crack down on short-term rentals. Quote, help us support our community with rules and regulations that will truly impact the quality of life in our beautiful town, said a letter recently distributed in the Sanders Beach neighborhood. The private group had 67 members on Facebook as of Thursday. It says that there are less than 400 permitted STRs in Coeur d'Alene. Quote, properly permitted STRs make huge contributions to the local economy by providing additional lodging options to visitors, paying hospitality taxes, supporting patronage to local businesses and restaurants, and maintaining hundreds of local jobs for cleaners, property maintenance, laundry services, and many others, according to the letter. It goes on to state that the non-permitted STRs in Coeur d'Alene are estimated to be from 500 to 1,000. One half of the city of the Coeur d'Alene's General Service Public Works Committee, Amy Evans, Dan English, and Christy Wood, is scheduled to hear the city's proposals for getting tougher with STRs when it meets at noon Monday in the library community room. Council members Woody McEvers, Kiki Miller, and Dan Gookin heard the tentative plans August 22nd. Senior planner Sean Holm told them that in the August 2021, the city had 228 STRs. Today, it has 381 permitted STRs in the city, with most south of Interstate 90 near downtown, and with some blocks having several STRs. It is estimated that there are about 700 unpermitted illegal STRs, which means the city could have more than 1,000 STRs total. The problems associated with STRs are many. Short-term rentals have been blamed for driving up housing costs by reducing long-term rentals, thus driving out blue-collar workers and leaving businesses with unfilled jobs. Others cite issues with noise, parking, and say it's impacting the integrity of the neighborhoods. Quote, it's affecting everything, said Councilwoman Kiki Miller. Solutions being considered include limiting short-term rentals to owner-occupied properties within residential zones, requiring off-street parking, requiring a minimum two-night stay, increasing the violation fees, hiring a company to enforce compliances with the new STR rules. City Attorney Randy Adams said the city is on solid legal ground in establishing STR laws. The next step in the process after Monday's committee hearing, including stakeholder outreach, workshops, and public hearings, with a goal to have a new ordinance by January. Okay. Well, STRs, I've stated STRs before here locally for like a bachelor party or something like that. It can be kind of cool. But at the same time, I can definitely see the issues that are associated with it. And maybe there's a little bit of a North Idaho native in the background of me going, yeah, these are a problem. Probably not as bad as I think. I could definitely see from the perspective of somebody who might live next to one of these that they could be just constant rotating party houses. That could get mildly annoying if you weren't planning on having that when you bought your home or moved into that area. But I also do think that property owners should be able to do what they want with their property. So, you know what? I see both sides of it. I know. Wow. Broken record, Chance. Always seeing both sides of everything. Ugh. How annoying. We need more hard opinions on the show, Chance. Come on. I'll do my best. Home of the lowest prices on all things outdoor since 1975, Black Sheep Sporting Goods is your one-stop shop for all your camping, fishing, hunting, and clothing needs. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Check out Black Sheep's new location in the Silver Lake Mall. Black Sheep Sporting Goods, celebrating 45 years as your favorite sporting goods store. Moving north to the Bonner County Daily Bee out of the Sandpoint, headlines from Wednesday, September 7th, headline, Ponderay, come meet your neighbors. That is the whole point of the city's annual Neighbor Day, a chance to celebrate the end of summer with neighbors, family, and friends. All the fun starts at 1 p.m. and continues until 6 p.m. on Saturday, September 10th, at the Haberson Field, located behind the Hoot Owl Restaurant on Highway 200 in Ponderay, with parking off Emerald Industrial Park Drive. The festivities will bring the community together around cotton candy, crafts, retail vendors, and live music. The event will also include magic by Star Alexander, inflatables, local food vendors, and fun activities for the whole family. From 1:30 to 5:30 p.m., live music can be heard throughout the event, made possible by the generous contributions from the Ponderay community businesses, said Kaylee Miller, city planning director and project manager. Performing will be the band One Street Over, which will take the stage. Sweet Lou's is hosting a beer garden and serving up food. Other food vendors include Truckin' Delicious, Hot Dog, that's two G's and an exclamation point, Killer Tacos, ice cream from Sun Bear, cotton candy and shaved ice from Bombshell Sweets, cupcakes from Lakeside Bake Co., and more. Boy, they all sound delicious. Ponderay Police and Northside Fire will go head-to-head in the second annual keg battle. Keg battle? Oh, boy. I need to know what it... If it's anything what I'm guessing it is, a keg battle sounds pretty awesome. In addition, the fire district will host extrication, boy, that word's always tough for me, extrication and hands-on fire extinguisher demonstrations during the event. Hope they don't fire extinguishers at each other in the keg battle. More family-friendly activities include a petting zoo, inflatables, pony rides, and North 40 fly fishing booths, craft activity by Home Depot, and so much more. Attendees are also invited to stop by the North Idaho Ice, or NIICE, booth, to play a little hockey as the local nonprofit kicks off fundraising efforts to bring an ice rink to Ponderay. Woo! I am pro ice rink. Might be a little biased here. Miller said the city will also be featuring the latest Field of Dreams concept renderings from HMH Engineering. Updates on multiple projects include the Front Yard Project to explore the upcoming lakeshore connection to the Ponderay Bay Trail will be given at the event during the public open house at Little City Hall. That will allow the community to ask questions and leave feedback about the project. Because Neighbor Day is a celebration of community connections, event admissions and activities are free to all who attend. For more information, visit the city website. There's a very, very messy URL link here, but it is included in the actual story. So jump over to the Bonner County Daily Bee website and check that out. Or call Ponderay City Hall at 208-265-5468. Moving on. Washington man arrested on meth charges. That's never a good thing. This by Daniel Radford. Washington resident Daniel Edward Inwood, 63, may be going to prison for drug trafficking. Inwood was pulled over on August 19, 2020, after a deputy caught him going nearly 70 miles per hour in a 55 zone. Inwood told Bonner County Sheriff's Deputy Justin Penn during the traffic stop that there was nothing illegal in the car, according to a probable cause affidavit. I picture him awkwardly saying that, like not being prompted. Like Deputy Penn walked up and he said license and registration, and Inwood goes, there's nothing illegal in the car. officer, there is nothing illegal in this car. I didn't ask you that. I just wanted your license and registration. Well, I was just letting you know, okay, that there is nothing illegal in this car. You don't need to search it. There's no reason to do that. That'd be a waste of your time. You funny guy. However, when BCSO Deputy Tom Simbalik arrived, his drug dog gave a positive alert for the vehicle, Penn said in the affidavit. Inwood again denied that there was anything illegal in the vehicle. Penn asked Inwood to step out of the vehicle and conduct a search of both his vehicle and Inwood himself. Penn noted that Inwood was sweating profusely despite the temperature being only about 65 degrees. I don't know if you know this or not, listeners, but drug dogs don't tend to lie about these things. I wrote a story very early on in my career about drug dogs coming to the Shoshone County Sheriff's Office. There's really not a lot of precedent for proving a drug dog wrong. They have no reason to lie, and they're kind of trained to do that. So it's no, the dog's wrong. I don't know what that dog's talking about. I told you there's nothing in the car. that is not going to work. Just FYI, as I keep reading, you'll find out that that did not work for Mr. Inwood right here. During the search, $1,430 was found on his person and almost $2,000 was found in his car. Deputies also found a digital scale, two used glass pipes, packaging materials, and over 40 grams of a white crystalline substance. Gosh, I wonder what that is, according to court documents. After being read as Miranda rights, Inwood allegedly admitted the substance was methamphetamine. He denied selling the drug, but admitted to purchasing it in Idaho, according to the affidavit. Due to the large amount of cash, methamphetamine, and packaging materials, Penn took Inwood into custody under the suspicion of drug trafficking. Inwood's trial is set to start September 12th. Yeah, the scale in the car is kind of a dead giveaway on distribution of drugs, and usually the large amount found also kind of gives that away. Hard to justify that amount of meth. That being said, though, you know what? I've never done meth. I've never purchased meth. So you know what? Maybe that's off my radar, and I know nothing about that. But I'm just, you know, based off of the stories that I've written and the law enforcement officials that I've talked to, definitely sounds like a trafficking type situation. Don't forget to join the Andes Heating and Cooling team for their 50th anniversary celebration on September 16th and 17th for up to 50% off showroom floor models of outdoor living, barbecues, and fireplaces. Andes Heating and Cooling is located at 7800 North Government Way in Coeur d'Alene and can be reached by phone at 208-772-4570. Takes into Thursday, September 8th headlines from coming out of Sandpoint. Headline advocates to sue feds to protect bull trout. This is by Daniel Radford. State and national conservationists are suing the federal government in an effort to protect critical bull trout habitat at the mouth of Trestle Creek. Ooh, I've known since I was a kid, you don't mess with the bull trout here in North Idaho, or in Idaho in general, really, but especially up here. After the formal complaint filed by Idaho Conservation League and the Center for Biological Diversity 2 weeks ago, on September 7th, the Center and ICL issued a notice of intent to sue the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. In the notice of intent, the conservation group alleges that the Corps violated two sections of the Endangered Species Act and a section of the Clean Water Act. ICL and the center claim the Corps failed to ensure that its actions do not jeopardize bull trout or harm critical bull trout habitat. They also claimed in the notice, often a precursor to a formal lawsuit, that the agency failed to ensure that its actions promote conservation and recovery of bull trout. The group also claimed that the Corps' permitting of planned dredging and fill operation violated the Clean Water Act by failing to adequately identify wetlands or adequately assess wetlands also affected. It also failed to document existing conditions or ensure mitigation of potential impacts to bull trout. The ESA directs federal agencies to work together to preserve endangered and threatened species and outlines procedures needed to permit a project. A section of those guidelines requires a federal agency to ensure that any action permitted, funded, or done by a federal agency, quote, is not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of any endangered or threatened species or result in the destruction or adverse modification of critical habitat in the area. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service designated Trestle Creek as a critical habitat for bull trout in 2010. That designation requires the Corps to conduct a biological assessment of the Idaho's club plan. Since the assessment by the Corps, quote, determined that the proposed action is likely to ESA-listed resources in the project's action area, the Corps was required to initiate formal consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and receive a biological opinion. In the notice to sue, the conservation groups argued that the USFWS, quote, failed to adequately analyze the expected and significant increase in motorboat traffic that will result after project completion. This discrepancy, ICL and the center allege, means that the appropriate, quote, environmental baseline for the bull trout at Trestle Creek has not yet been established, contrary to federal regulations. Because that opinion is inaccurate, ICL and the center also argue that the Corps could be liable for the loss of bull trout if the Corps uses it as a basis for its decision. The notice also alleges that that insurance of the permit for the marina and associated development violates the Clean Water Act in four ways. Additionally, the notice claims that the Corps failed to issue, quote, appropriate and predictable mitigation measures and that the agency failed to adequately document baseline conditions, including the type and quantity of wetlands potentially threatened by the project, causing the Corps to violate its own permitting requirements. The letter of intent was sent Wednesday to D.C. to Lieutenant General Scott A. Spellman of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, as well as the regulatory project manager in Coeur d'Alene. Oh boy. It definitely sounds like a lot of legalese right there. Kind of gloss over a little bit, hard details, but, you see the word bull trout. I knew from a very young age that if I saw anything remote, I was kind of paranoid of it when I was a kid. I always, when you didn't know how to identify a fish when I was a kid, every rainbow trout that I pull out, looking at my dad going, "Hey, this is a bull trout. Do I need to throw this back?" Yeah, I was definitely paranoid of that when I was a kid. So if it's still anything like that, if they're still endangered like they were when I was a kid, this could be a big problem. Moving on, Suicide Awareness and Prevention event gathers people together. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. Tucked inside the bright blue wristband is a lifeline. Printed on the outside is the message, "Hold on, pain ends." Inside, the crisis text line from the Mental Health Center of America is embossed inside the wristband. Quote, "These are great things to keep with you and pass out throughout the year," said Walk for Hope organizer Jennifer Wyman, who lost her daughter Maddie to suicide. Quote, "If you run into anybody that might be struggling, give one to them." The wristbands were handed out to several hundred participants who walked across the Long Bridge on Sunday to raise awareness about suicide prevention, to raise money for Underground Kindness, to fund speakers and programs at local schools. Also handed out were powder blue balloons and flat river rocks, both to write messages of hope, positive affirmations, or the name of a loved one lost to suicide, were handed out at Sunday's 7th annual Walk for Hope. The rocks could also be used to jot a negative throughout thought that could be tossed out as they cross the bridge, Wyman said. Quote, "Sometimes maybe we need to let go of something that's been bothering us and weighing our hearts down. So write that negative thought down, and maybe when you walk across the bridge, you feel the time is right and you drop it over the edge," she said, before joking to make sure that when there were no boats below when they did. Quote, "But you can release that thought and carry on and not feel weighed down by that anymore." Those taking part in the walk said they wanted to send a message of support to both those struggling and the group's message of kindness and compassion. Events such as the Walk for Hope, with hundreds of people walking across a long bridge in a highly visible area, help call attention to the cause, she said. Yeah, this is a really great thing. There's so many different resources out there for suicide help. Go talk to somebody, all right? It's we all go through struggles in life, but it will definitely pass, and you can always – things can get better. Things will get better. There's definitely resources out there to reach out for that, so you're not alone. Moving on, Friday, September 9th headlines. We've got a fire update for you. In the last episode, there's a lot of hard details in the latest fire report. Most of the wildfires that are causing the smoke in our area are coming from the Bonner and Boundary County areas. I'm going to jump through. I'm just going to give you guys a quick little rundown of them, just in case you're curious. And for those who might be living in the area, this is good information to know so you can be prepared if something does unfortunately happen in your area. So we'll jump into this story right now. We're going to start on the Katka Fire, part of the Kootenai River Complex. So complex is a larger system of fires, that multiple fires in a complex, basically. In Boundary County, helped push the total area by fires in the complex burned to 15,640 acres, forest officials said. An overnight mapping flight found that the fire grew by 76 acres, with a total complex growing by 1,950 acres. Fire's growth was spurred by a heavy concentration of dead and downed trees in the steep terrain where the fire is located. However, the fire is not directly threatening private property, and crews are actively scouting areas around the fire for roads as well as locations to build indirect fire lines. The eastern sides of the Scotch Creek, Russell Mountain, and Trout fires grew slightly Wednesday, producing visible columns of smoke, but the eastern sides of the fires were sheltered from prevailing winds, which limited fire growth. Structure protection and water delivery systems east of the Aeneas Peak fire are complete and being tested and improved. In addition, officials said a fire line west of West Side Road and a connected hand line around the Fisher and Trout Creek areas are being completed. Fire crews, now totaling 261 people, are also working to remove vegetation and install hose lines east of the Scotch Creek, Russell Mountain, and Trout and Aeneas fires. Moving on, we've got an update on the Diamond Watch fire. Containment of that fire, located 5.5 miles due west of Nordman, has increased to 49%. Due to the area's rugged terrain, steep and dangerous terrain, Forest Service officials said the fire is being fought using a contained and confined strategy. That fire has burned a total of 957 acres since it was sparked by lightning in mid-July. Moving on to the Columbus and Bear Gulch fires, this was also sparked by lightning, but in late August, the Columbus fire on the Coeur d'Alene River Ranger District has now burned an estimated 1,000 acres. 6 miles northwest of Murray, the fire is being managed under a confine and contain strategy due to its steep and rugged terrain, Forest Service officials said. The nearby Bear Gulch fire has burned an estimated 144 acres. Also caused by lightning, the fire is located 6 miles east of Murray. The fire, which is about a mile away from the Idaho-Montana line, is burning in terrain very similar to the Columbus fire, which, with, quote, abundant snag hazards and access challenges. Moving on, the Boulder Mountain fire, detected on August 31st, is located 9 miles northwest of Coosick, Washington. The fire, which has burned an estimated 1,328 acres, is now listed at 6% containment. The fire is being fought by the Great Basin Type 2 Management Team No. 7, with 458 fire personnel assigned. Lastly, in this update, we've got the Thor fire. That grew slightly overnight, now estimated at 1,189 acres. The fire is located about 5 miles east of Sullivan Lake in heavy timber and steep terrain. The nearby Slate fire, which has burned roughly 100 acres, officials said there is minimal threat to recreational areas, infrastructure, and private property. All right, there's your wildfire update, everybody. Everybody be safe. Don't be going close, and let the firefighters do their job. It's a dangerous job, but hopefully with the weather cooling down, they'll have a little easier job here coming up. Moving on, Dover sponsors a new event. This is by Bo White Eagle. Cooling temperatures and leaves changing colors means fall is on its way, and with it comes a brand new event to the city of Dover, the Harvest Festival. On Saturday, October 1st, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., the city is inviting the community to come together and enjoy seasonal harvest from local vendors. With the goal of shining a light on the city and the community of Dover, the event is sponsored and hosted by the city. Quote, the city wanted to do this for the community, city finance manager Robin Pilkington, who's spearheading the event, said. Festival goers can expect to see a number of vendor booths from soaps and lotions to leather workings and pastries at the event. However, Pilkington said that although invitations have been sent to all the businesses in Dover that have registered a business license, there is still room for more. With the vendor spaces being free, Pilkington said that any craft or farmer, food vendor, or small business in Bonner County is welcome to apply, as she would like to have a lot of vendors for the festival's inaugural year. Wanting a well-rounded festival, Pilkington said that the addition to local craft and food vendors, the invitation extends to local organizations, such as the Westside Fire District and the Dover Historical Committee, which will be debuting updated historical information about the city. Vendors wishing to apply can contact the city clerk Tiffany Camp at 208-265-8339 or apply online at a hyperlink that I am not going to spell out because it is a jumble of letters. America's gold and silver-owned Galena Mine in Wallace, Idaho is currently accepting applications for the position of maintenance supervisor. The maintenance supervisor is responsible for overseeing all aspects of maintenance needs. The ideal candidate for the position would have an associate's degree in maintenance-related fields, 5-plus years of experience, and 2-plus years in a supervisory role. This role is an excellent opportunity to work on a variety of projects, take charge of your career, and make a difference on a small team in a dynamic work environment. America's Gold and Silver offers competitive wages, a full employee benefit package, which includes medical, dental, vision, life, and disability insurance, PTO, 401k, and a pension plan. To apply for this and any other positions at the Galena Mine, visit www.americasgold.com/careers. That takes us into Shoshone News Press headlines for Friday, September 9th. Headline, Meet Your New Commissioner. This is by Josh McDonald. Shoshone County's first district has a new commissioner. Tracy Cassidy was appointed to the position last Thursday by Governor Brad Little, filling the seat that was vacated by Mike Fitzgerald in early August. She was one of the three names that were submitted to Governor Little's office earlier this month by the Shoshone County Democratic Central Committee. The governor then has 15 days to make his decision. Cassidy has worked for Shoshone County for the past 9 years, spending all of those years working under the guidance of the county clerk, first Peggy White, now Tammy Lewis Eberhardt. In her new position, Cassidy will serve out the remaining 2 years and 4 months left out of Fitzgerald's term, but right now she isn't concerned with the length of time she has or the possibility of re-election. Cassidy has one goal right now. Quote, I just want to do a good job for the people here in Shoshone County, Cassidy said. Her near-universal training within the courthouse makes her an invaluable asset to the community, but it also sets her up to be an incredible asset as part of the BOCC. Quote, I'm really able to help everywhere, Cassidy said. Working full-time under the clerk, I've learned recorder's duties, social services, payroll, and finances. I'm extremely excited about this opportunity. I want to be here. Cassie joins fellow commissioners Jay Huber and John Hansen on the Shoshone County Board of County Commissioners. Both Huber and Hansen gave glowing recommendations of their new co-worker and believe that she is the right person to fill the spot based on her knowledge of the inner workings of the county. Quote, "This was an excellent choice by the governor," BOCC Chairman Huber said. "She's a business owner, like John and myself, so she shares in the mindset of making every dollar go as far as it can and to not needlessly spend." Hansen agreed with and expounded upon what Huber said. Quote, "Tracy is going to be a great addition to our team," Hansen said. "This job isn't as easy as some people think it might be. It's complicated at times and complex. Tracy has been cross-trained in a lot of different jobs within the county. She's fluent in accounting, accounts payable, and budgets. She's also very personable, so she'll be a great fit." Here's hoping that she does well in the job, filling some big shoes for Commissioner Fitz. Former Commissioner Fitz, rather. Moving on, Splashtacular, Wallace Pool Party. This by Molly Roberts. Celebrate the end of summer at the Wallace City Pool with a Splashtacular free pool party this Saturday afternoon. The party will have three competitive events, a river raft relay race, a fancy football catch, and an epic cannonball splash competition. That definitely sounds fun. The event is hosted by the Friends of the Wallace City Pool, a group of community members that was created years ago to give local children the opportunity to swim safely in Wallace. Wallace business owner Jocelyn Bachman, also on the Friends board, explained that the most important aspect is giving children safe access to the water. Quote, "We are surrounded by a lot of water in North Idaho. We want to make sure that children are comfortable, have access to swim lessons, and essentially be safe," Bachman said. "This was an exciting year for the Wallace City Pool, as four years ago, it was discovered that the pool had a leak, which ended up being a pretty spendy fix at more than $1 million. In the meantime, eager swimmers were able to be bused to the Mullen Pavilion thanks to the Friends. The city was able to allocate its opening operating funds for the four missed years, as well as local donations and grant funds. The pool was opened on July 17th for locals to enjoy the hottest summer months at the pool with swim lessons, aqua zumba classes, night swims, and water aerobics. Bachman told the news press that in August, more than 1,000 children and adults visited and enjoyed the pool and could do so for free, as the Friends covered the admission. The party will take place Saturday, September 10th from noon to 3 p.m., Game participation requires signing up from noon to 1 p.m., with the contest being at 1 p.m. Quote, "There are three big prizes, and we will have smaller prizes for all participants," group organizer Grant Arthun said. Jenna Grant Arthun, rather. Bachman added, "Everyone who participates will leave with something." In addition, an ice cream truck will be out front, providing free ice cream for partygoers and free popsicles. Sounds like a fun time, everyone. Go out and beat the heat while there's still heat to beat. All right, rounding out the show, we're going to go head up to the Bonner's Ferry Herald. Headlines from Thursday, September 8th. Commissioners planning projects with ARPA funds. This is by Emily Bo-Sung. Boundary County commissioners are meeting with various county departments to see what county projects can be paid for through received American Rescue Plan Act funds. On August 29th, commissioners met with Boundary County Park and Recreation President Rob Tompkins and Vice President Brandon Glaza to discuss possible projects that would qualify for ARPA funds. Commissioners have also had discussions with Emergency Risk Management Andrew O'Neill on August 23rd regarding using the ARPA funds for a new fire station at Curly's Creek and updating the equipment for the water truck. The commissioners are researching whether funding the fire station is allowed under the ARPA rules. Commissioners said that they want a list of priorities and project costs for equipment, repairs, or improvements for different county departments before approving the use of the ARPA funds. Another public hearing will be held as the county budget will be open to reflect the ARPA dollars. On August 15th, the Boundary County Commissioners voted to spend approximately $500,000 of the ARPA funds for the improvements of Boundary County Sheriff's Office facilities and the Boundary County County Ambulance Services in a 3-0 vote. Funds will go to a new roof, HVAC repairs, and a generator at the Armory Building, and a fully fitted ambulance for BCAS. The commissioners accepted the first two ARPA payments for various county projects at the July 18th meeting after receiving feedback from Chief Deputy Prosecutor Tevis Hull. Hull researched the ARPA funds for months. The commissioners had previously said that they would accept the funds but had not decided if they would use the funds in the future. That was partly due to the final rule not being available at the time of acceptance and the commissioners waiting for litigation to finish and gain more clarity on what executive orders or strings were attached to the funds. The county has until 2024 to dedicate funds and has until 2026 to spend the funds. The commissioner said that they are not in a rush to spend the money at all once. all at once. Boy, oh boy, that was complicated. Sorry about that, everybody. Pretty common thing. Every day, everybody is a little skeptical of the federal government, especially taking money. Old Ronald Reagan's words ringing true to everybody. They be cautious when the government is coming out to help. But I think in this case, everybody, it's kind of a you use it or you lose it kind of situation. So sounds better to, in this case, spend the money. And so far, I personally haven't heard of any strings being attached, it coming back and biting anybody in the ass anyway. Not that I've heard of. Moving on, last story of the day, city to conduct lead pipe survey. This is by Emily Bosung. The city will be conducting a lead pipe survey of its infrastructure by October 16th, 2024, due to the Environmental Protection Agency's next step for lead and copper rule. EPA officials said there is no safe level of lead exposure. That is accurate, everybody. There is literally, it's not like, oh, I have a little bit. No. No lead in your blood system. It's not okay. When it comes to drinking water, the primary source of lead is from pipes, which can present a risk to the health of children and adults. In December of 2021, the EPA announced the next steps to strengthen the regulatory framework on lead in drinking water, following the agency's review of the lead and copper rule revision under President Joe Biden's Executive Order 13990. The EPA has concluded that there are significant opportunities to improve the rule to support proactively removing lead service lines and, quote, more equitability protecting public health. With the update to the EPA's lead and copper rule, the community water systems are required to remove lead pipes. Mike Klaus, city engineer, said the city will need to look at each water service line and see what they are made of. He added that the responsibility doesn't stop at the meter, but that the lines and homes have to be checked for lead and copper as well. Klaus said the water department's knowledge there are no lead service lines, but said that there may be plumbing fixtures in homes that have lead in them. Quote, most of our problems, I would estimate, are internal to the homes and not to the service lines, he said. However, officials said that that doesn't change the fact that the city has to do the pipe survey by the deadline. Klaus said the Department of Environmental Quality recently created guidance on how the city and other jurisdictions can move forward, along with the future seminars and training. Klaus added that the DEQ and the city will be looking at service lines to local schools and daycares first, to the younger population being more vulnerable. He said there will be a timeline for replacement for homeowners and the city to remove copper and lead. Klaus clarified that the issue is not in the source water, but lead and copper housing fixtures. The city does not have detailed records on service lines, so there will be a significant effort by the water department to look into these lines, Klaus said. There should be a final guidance by the DEQ by the end of the year. Klaus estimates that the city of Bonners Ferry has an estimated 1,300 to 1,400 service lines. The city's water department is working on a strategy in order to complete the task. Boy, oh boy, that's a hefty task. But you know what? After writing about lead contamination for so long, after living in the Silver Valley for quite a while, lead is not good for you. And it's probably a good thing that they're looking into this. And if they can cut down on the level of lead in our drinking water, I think everybody can get behind that. Last thing, it's not a story, but I want to give a shout out to Emily Bosung here. In the Bonners Ferry Herald, they implemented this best beard contest. And shout out to a man named Jeff Avery. He wins the county's best beard of 2022 contest. Guys, I shared it on the North Idaho Now Facebook page so you can see it. Go jump over there. This is as someone who has in the past and plans to in the future when it gets colder out, have a big bushy beard. This beard's pretty impressive. So kudos to Mr. Jeff Avery for winning this. Go jump over to the North Idaho Now Facebook page to take a look at this. Luxurious, well-kempt beard. Annie's Heating and Cooling has been selling and installing furnaces, air conditioners, fireplaces, barbecues, and much more in the new and existing home since 1972. 50 years later, Annie's Heating and Cooling is still doing business the old-fashioned way with a handshake. Come and visit Andy's showroom at 7800 North Government Way in Coeur d'Alene, which features all the latest wood-fired stoves, pellet stoves, and gas stoves from Quadrifier, Heatilator, and Heat & Glow. Andy's also carries the Big Green egg smokers and grills. Join the Andy's Heating and Cooling team on Friday, September 16th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, September 17th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. to celebrate 50 years of operations in North Idaho with special deals, grilled and smoked food, and raffles. Y'all can even probably say hi to me when I pop in there on Saturday. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Hope you liked today's show. Please check us out on www.cdapress.com, ShoshoneNewsPress.com, BonnerCountyDailyBee.com, or the BonnersFerryHerald.com. Once again, I'm going to remind everybody, please, please, please subscribe to us on whatever platform you listen to us on, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, whatever it may be. We appreciate those subscriptions. And if it's possible, leave us a nice review. That makes me just so happy. Makes me so happy. It makes my boss happy. All right, everybody. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.